Good evening and welcome to the November 2024 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Moralia. Next week on December 1st, the world will gather to commemorate once again World AIDS Day. This annual event serves as an important reminder that we must all remain steadfast in our commitment to prevent new HIV infections and provide essential services to all people living with HIV globally. This year's theme is Collective Action, Sustain and Accelerate HIV Progress. And tonight we commemorate World AIDS Day with leaders from our local community, our local AIDS organization, face-to-face. Earlier this month, face-to-face announced a new expanded mission statement and presented our community with a brand new logo. So stay with us. All the details are coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, November 24th, 2024. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of November 24th, 2024. The Capital Pride Alliance, along with global partner InterPride, announced this month the official theme for this year's World Pride Celebration taking place in Washington, D.C. The theme is The Fabric of Freedom. Following the results of this month's U.S. election, this year's theme is one of unity and a call for global action to LGBTQ+ people and their allies. Those voices, those individuals, and those messages are woven together, each an essential piece of the movement to build and foster inclusion, safety, and equity for everyone. At a time of division when the LGBTQ+ community finds itself threatened both in the U.S. and around the world, the fabric of the flag symbolizes the strength of the community and shared humanity, and the unshakable unity that defines resilience, love, and acceptance. Organizers are inviting everyone who fights for these freedoms to come together in the same place, in a city known for hosting some of the most influential movements in the country's history. 2025 will mark the 50th anniversary of Pride celebrations in the nation's capital, concurrently with World Pride. It all happens May 17th through June 8th, 2025. And earlier this month in the state of Ohio, the state Senate passed SB 104, a transgender bathroom bill that applies to all students in the state, including those in higher education. The bill is called the Protect All Students Act, and it passed with a vote of 24-7. The bill heavily restricts the ability of transgender people to use bathrooms they identify with. The bill says, quote, a school shall designate each student restroom, locker room, changing room, or shower room that is accessible by multiple students at the same time, whether located in a school building or located in a facility used by the school for a school-sponsored activity, for the exclusive use of students of the male biology sex only, or by students of the female biology sex only, end quote. The bill now goes to Governor Mike DeWine's desk, who is expected to sign it. The ban does not apply to school faculty, children under 10 needing family assistance, or people with disabilities. The bill does not rely on a definition of gender, but rather biological sex, which it defines as the, quote, biological indication of male and female, end quote. The bill makes no exception for intersex individuals who do not fit into biological sex categories neatly. Joycelyn Rosnick, who's the policy director for the American Civil Liberties Union, said, quote, if allowed to go into effect, SB 104 will create unsafe environments for transgender and gender nonconforming individuals of all ages. This bill ignores the material reality that transgender people endure higher rates of sexual violence and assaults, particularly while using public restrooms, than do cisgender people. And also this month, Theodore Olson, the iconic appellate lawyer involved in the George W. Bush victory before the Supreme Court in 2000 and the defeat of California's Proposition 8 in 2013, that was the same-sex marriage ban, passed away at the age of 84. Olson appeared more than 60 times before the United States Supreme Court. It came as a surprise, therefore, to liberals, conservatives, and the LGBTQ+ community alike when Olson took on the effort to strike down Proposition 8. Olson teamed up with his former nemesis, David Boies, to help overturn the ballot initiative. Olson once told the LA Times, quote, it's a conservative value to respect the relationship that people seek to have with one another, a stable, committed relationship that provides a backbone for our community and for our economy. I think conservatives should value that, end quote. Olson said he endured the wrath of the conservative establishment as a result, and conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh denounced him on his talk show, and dinner invitations in Washington dried up, despite Olson's status as a fixture in conservative and social political circles. Olson was recruited to the Prop 8 case by actor and activist Rob Reiner. In that case, Olson argued, quote, "What Prop 8 does is label gay and lesbian persons as different, inferior, unequal, and disfavored. It says to gays and lesbians, your relationship is not the same." Olson and Boyce went on to write a memoir together titled Redeeming the Dream, Proposition 8 and the Struggle for Marriage Equality. It was published in 2014. Olson once said, quote, "It's important to be surrounded by people who think differently than we do. We don't learn anything if we surround ourselves by people who think the same way," end quote. You can hear our interview with Ted Olson when he was a guest on Outbeat News In Depth back in 2014. Just go to our website at outbeatnews.com and search for Ted Olson.
For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moraglia. World AIDS Day is an annual opportunity to be reminded that HIV is still a deadly virus, and that rates of new infections in several populations continue to grow. Here in Sonoma County, Face to Face has been supporting those living with HIV and working to eliminate the spread of the disease for more than four decades. Here with us tonight to commemorate World AIDS Day 2024 is Executive Director Sarah Brewer, Program Director Lori Violette, and Development Director Gary Saperstein. Welcome to you all.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Super.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I'm excited to hear this new mission statement and to see the new logo and talk about really the next phase of Face to Face. But Face to Face has been around for a long time, 41 years, and it would be hard for me to believe anyone who's lived in our community for any length of time who doesn't really know what Face to Face does. But for those who may be new to listening, Sarah, let's start with you. Take us back. What was the impetus for Face to Face in the first place?
Yeah, so face-to-face began 41 years ago. We were a grassroots response and a lifeline for people in Sonoma County that were affected, or who were affected by HIV and AIDS. At the time, there was very little understanding of the disease and there were very few resources. And so our organization was formed to provide compassionate care and support for those who were living with and often dying from HIV AIDS. So we grew out of a necessity and a deep care for our community, and we were grounded in a mission to stand by those affected during a period of extreme fear and isolation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, I think, from that is in our name. We showed up for people face to face, stood by their side, and showed them the dignity and the care and respect that they deserved.
And Sonoma County has had a pretty close relationship with the epicenter of this pandemic, right? I mean, from very early on.
Yeah, I think the quick answer is our proximity to San Francisco, which was an early epicenter of the AIDS crisis. And many, many people, there's a really vibrant, thriving gay community here in Sonoma County, and especially the Mercy River area. So many people moved up here to live and to, I think, in community of people who were impacted by AIDS with strong social and community ties. I think that, you know, face-to-face became a really important extension of San Francisco's efforts and a huge collaborator in that bringing resources. It was San Francisco, New York, LA, and Sonoma County.
Right.
It really was, that, like Sarah said, that proximity. And it just was a place to leave the city and go live in this, live out, I mean, literally live out your final days, because you knew at that time there wasn't any hope. And so to move up to a beautiful place like Russian River and Guerneville just became like one of the things to do to live out those last remaining days.
Right. And Guerneville had already been sort of established as a resort town. It was a place where people from the city came up more to relax and celebrate. And now, as you say, it ended up being a place where many people came to live out their last years. Just last month, we were talking about the biography of Randy Schultz, the very famous journalist from the San Francisco Chronicle and the author of those three amazing books, including And the Band Played On. And he did just that. He ended up dying up here in Sonoma County. So sad. Lori, what do you remember from that time?
Yeah, so I jumped in the prevention scene of HIV in 2000. So when I came into the scene, you know, HIV treatment was a lot more sophisticated than it was in the 90s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a lot of memory about what was happening during that time, but all of what my colleagues have said is all of the same things that I have heard as well. just peaceful living, more acceptance. Also, I've had people inform me in the early days that their healthcare here was so much better, that there were specialists here that were working with HIV and had specialty care around that.
And I've heard that from others as well that we've talked to over the years, that this was really a special place almost from the beginning. Well, the mission of Face-to-Face has shifted over those years. You've described it being in response to needing to care for people who were essentially dying. That was it, because there was no treatment, there was no prevention at that point. It was literally a death sentence at that time. But that really has shifted. Talk about how the mission of Face-to-Face has evolved over the last 40 years to this new mission that you have.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think, over the years, our mission has shifted from providing really end-of-life care to proactive approaches that are focused on prevention. And I think as you've identified, as treatments became more accessible and more effective, the marker is often 1996 with the advent of highly active antiretroviral therapy, when we started to see a shift. And also, to some extent, a small decrease in the stigma around HIV, though less so, I think. I mean, it's still alive and well, I'm sad to say. But we were able to expand our focus and incorporate more prevention efforts like education, like HIV testing, like advocacy. We had a speakers bureau, people living with HIV were going around the community and connecting with community members and really focusing on education and getting tested. And, we continue to evolve. I think 2019, we added our harm reduction program, our syringe exchange program, and I'll let Lori speak to more details about that, because that is absolutely the product of her expertise, just incredible what she's done. But again, around the rationale for that was around preventing infectious disease, preventing HIV and Hep C. And then as treatments became available for Hep C and testing, if we added Hep C to HIV, as PrEP became available, the prevention medication, of course, then we started working on PrEP navigation, getting people linked to that. So today, I mean, there's still a huge emphasis around prevention, but at the core of what we do and what we will always do is to continue to support people living with HIV around the very real structural and social barriers that prevent people from accessing care. And that's really around the housing support, financial assistance, education, transportation, isolation. All of these issues are huge and have huge impacts on a person's ability to manage their HIV care. Mm-hmm. So even though there's effective treatment, it's not a walk in the park. It's still not a cakewalk. And there's still a lot of work that we do to support people living with HIV and people who have lived for over 30 years with HIV. So I guess in summary, I had to say that while our focus, we've added a lot more prevention efforts. I think at the core of who we are continues to be supporting people living with HIV.
It's awesome. Lori, talk a little bit about the harm reduction programs that Sarah just mentioned. We know that IV drug users from the very beginning were some of the folks who were most impacted. They weren't talked about in the media nearly as much as gay men were when the disease was first known as sort of a gay disease. But, the syringe provides that perfect vessel to transmit the virus, right? Talk about what's going on now and the harm reduction programs that Sarah mentioned. What is Face-to-Face doing?
Yes, absolutely. So in March of 2014, Face-to-Face started its syringe service program. And what that looked like at that point was literally providing safe and sterile equipment for people who use drugs, injection drugs, to be able to use their drugs without any kind of, biohazard in their syringe or used syringes or an old discarded syringes, that type of thing. Today, when we talk about harm reduction, it's not only syringe exchange. It's a big misconception that is. And so that's why we're really talking in a bigger picture of harm reduction, because harm reduction is actually more than just a syringe service program. Mm-hmm. It's, providing people with what they need to be as safe as possible for whatever substance they're using, including snorting substances, and giving them education around, riots, risky to share straws, and smoking devices and why it's important to access safe smoking devices and education around keeping the person's lips moistened and staying hydrated and how that affects a person's ability to make choices that may put them at higher risk for contracting HIV, Hep C, or other STIs. Mm-hmm. But it even goes broader than that, than just the supplies. It's really meeting people where they are. It's really treating people with love and dignity, regardless of where they are in their life. We are a smiley face to our community, and we provide them a place that they can be themselves, and they don't have to hide behind, you know, any kind of curtain or anything and mm-hmm. hide what they're doing. We're talking about the real deal. We're talking about their substance use. We're talking about sexual practices that may be safe or unsafe. You know, we're just talking about a lot of things that cross the mental health piece of it, the infectious disease piece of it. And so as a whole, we're treating that whole individual with dignity and compassion and love. Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of intersectionality, isn't there, between drug use and also the gay community. I mean, we've had a long history of where those two things have long gone together. Why do you think it's taken so long, though, for society to recognize the importance of providing these kinds of services? I mean, syringe exchange for a long time really was not a well-accepted or supported philosophy. It seems to have shifted, though, yeah?
I think a little bit as people, you know, grasp more knowledge and understanding about actually what it is. But you said something early on that I just wanted to go back to, and it was about how in the beginning, you know, gay men, you know, there's a lot of information out there for gay men to have for testing, but not a lot of information or resources for people who use injection drugs.
Right.
And I want to just talk about the importance of bringing people on with lived experience and that whole shift of providing syringe services to people who use drugs back then was led by people who use drugs. So it wasn't a public health intervention. It was led by people themselves on the streets that didn't want their friends and their family and their acquaintances to die. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very important piece to talk about because of where we are today in the opioid epidemic, it's very similar, a lot of similar-ish things along with the HIV epidemic. So I just wanted to make sure I didn't forget to say that piece.
Yeah, it's important.
And then you asked about the intersectionality. I think it's a lot of moral judgments on people's behalf on what they, you know, people do that to themselves. They shouldn't use drugs. They have a choice, that kind of thing. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't roll that way. You know, we lead with love and just providing people connection and a place to be themselves and a place to access resources is really that first stepping stone into planting that seed to having that beautiful flower grow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, just when we started, the thing is, when we started this, you know, the harm reduction program, the syringe exchange program, it was really underground because there was so much stigma around it and people didn't understand it at all.
Including local law enforcement.
Meant. And it took a good over 5 years until, I believe, here at Face to Face that we started to finally talk about it and then put it up on our website. And went out there and to do education on what it is. And so it has really evolved since its inception here at Face to Face.
Yeah, I think that opioid crisis had a lot to do with that. And just
absolutely.
And I feel like if we even took a step back and we talked about, it's not just discrimination against people who use drugs. I think we could talk about that around HIV full stop. I think all of the behaviors that lead to HIV tend to be, it's the people who are discriminated against, not the behaviors. And so, you know, from a public health perspective, we're looking at a virus exchange, but I think, you know, broader cultural sentiments are that people need to be punished for their behaviors or they deserve it. They get what they deserve. And that's what we're trying to combat is, to Lori's point is, you know, everybody's a human being, you know, we're all doing our best. We don't know what story a person is walking through this life with, what experiences they've had. And so to Lori's point, you know, we meet people where they are without judgment. And you know, we know that by connecting with people and holding them closer are giving them the love and support that they need, that they're better able, more likely to make choices, feel more empowered.
Sure.
To take control of their health and to make choices.
I think there's something we always say here at Face to Face, all of us, the entire team, we always remember that everyone who walks through our door or who they meet on the street, who's homeless, everybody is somebody's mother, brother, sister, brother, you know. You know, and they're all, no one grew up wanting to be homeless on the street or to be a drug addict. Nobody grew up wanting to be that. You know, circumstances happened. I think everyone needs to be treated with respect and with love and kindness. And that is something that we lead with every day here at Face to Face.
Thank goodness. Gary, let me shift a bit and ask you about this year's the World AIDS Day theme, which is collective action, sustain and accelerate HIV progress. You've witnessed all of this history as I have had. As you look back at the last 40 years of the pandemic, what are some of the milestones and progress that stand out to you?
Yeah, well, it's unbelievable. Just the other day, we were talking about it. It says, just feels like it was a lifetime ago. And thank God things have progressed. But, you know, the milestones, I was living in New York at that time and remembering hearing and seeing some articles just about some disease that was just affecting gay men. I remember reading that. And then it just started to, spiral from there. And it was awful. And then remembering that there was no treatment. You know, there were times when, even if you had a black and blue mark, you were scared. Oh, my God, what is this?
Right.
And then, AZT came out. And even though we knew that it ended up being this toxic drug that really wasn't working, at least there was something. It gave you hope for a little while. So that was a milestone, even though that really didn't work. And, definitely things like, PrEP, when that came out, that's a huge milestone, and then even before then, when they started coming out with meds that, were effective in helping people who were HIV positive to keep them, healthy, that was a huge, huge step forward. No doubt about it. And then PrEP came. So that was, another huge milestone, the fact that, we can protect ourselves that way. So, definitely it's progressed in such a, it's taken a long time and too many people died, unfortunately. But we're in a better place today than we were, although it still exists and a lot of people don't think it does. And there's still that stigma around it.
Right.
That we still have to deal with every day as being a part of the gay community.
Right. And the truth is there is not a cure. I think there's also a perception out there that like all the other STIs, now there's a vaccine you can get and there's a cure. I know from talking to my young students, they were under that impression, many of them anyway. And there isn't. So the risk is still great. People still need to be paying attention to what's going on around them and who they're with, and they need to be tested so that they can get treatment if they happen to test positive. What's the average life expectancy now? I think that's a question that always comes up for someone who tests HIV positive. Do you have a sense around where we're at with that? Any of you?
Yeah, my understanding is I'm not quoting any clinical material or study. Please don't quote me on that. But my understanding, at least in the last decade or so, is that it's really a minimal impact on the longevity of a person's life, maybe a couple of years. But a person that's, let's say they are infected in their 20s will live a long and healthy life, assuming that they stay adherent to their antiretrovirals, but get well into their 70s. I think what we're discovering now is we have some older folks who are living with HIV into their older years. A lot of the impacts of HIV, and I think specifically of people who had AIDS early on, you tend to age younger, so earlier, I guess. And so a lot of the heart conditions and some of the other memory issues, things like that, set in a person's, let's say, 40s or 50s rather than 60s or 70s. So there are certainly patients, I guess, just speaking to the quality of life, but in terms of longevity, it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Face-to-Face's achievements. There have certainly been many, many milestones at Face-to-Face. Lauren, let me start with you. What are some of the ones that you've witnessed since your time with Face to Face that, for you personally, are milestones?
So I would definitely say one of the big milestones when HIV testing came to face-to-face. HIV started their testing program. I would come to face-to-face every Tuesday afternoon and provide testing on a drop-in basis. I wasn't a staff here. I worked at a different organization, but I came here and I did testing. Mm-hmm. And then we expanded to Thursdays and we did the same thing with another staff coming on Thursdays. And then it came, went from that to testing every day. I started working here in 2016. I'm not going to brag, but I am going to brag a little because I am very proud of what has been accomplished here, not by myself only, but like me being just who I am and what I know about harm reduction. I feel like I had a good part in having that happen. And mm-hmm. that would be our comprehensive harm reduction program, mm-hmm. our naloxone distribution, our vending machines, our kiosks within our counties, our mobile unit that we have that goes out and about. And I think those are very important items to reach the people that we need to reach and important ways to reach them. Mm-hmm. It's not just one cookie cutter fits all. It's different people have different needs and different ways to get to reach them. And I think we have accomplished getting our foot in the door and making that happen. And now it's just about making our services more robust, not necessarily like expanding those services, but making them more robust to lead with what our community needs from us now. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other things too. I mean, we have bilingual staff. That's a huge milestone for us, where we had, years ago, it was really hard. We would have to call somebody to translate for us and things like that. And now we have not all staff are bilingual, but we have staff that are bilingual in every department, which is a huge benefit towards the population that we serve. Mm-hmm. I think Sarah, I'll let you add on since you're the big honcho here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I love what you said. I feel like in terms of milestones, we're in one right now. as Gary said, as our agency has evolved, and he said that we would hear all the time people saying things like, oh, HIV, you don't hear about that much anymore. It's not an issue. The other thing that we would hear all the time is, oh my gosh, we had no idea face-to-face was doing all that. And so it's like, that, people didn't know about all these other programs and that we had expanded. So in the last year and a half, we took a step back and really looked at ourselves and really just to ask ourselves, where is the epidemic now and where is it going and how can we continue to serve in the way that face-to-face uniquely serves in our community and has for 40 years. So we engaged with Mission Minded and have done some work looking at our mission and decided to expand our mission so that we can be more impactful and more effective and maintaining our commitment to ending HIV in Sonoma County at our core and supporting the folks who we support, but recognizing that overdose prevention, mental health, substance use, those intersections are huge and also huge drivers of the HIV epidemic as well. So we're at that turning point now. It's a huge milestone where we as an agency, we spent a lot of time thinking about our legacy and our history and how can we be how do we stay true to our history and to all of the people who built us and for all of, not even building us, the people that we supported, for all of those men who we supported, for us, it was just, we had to honor their dignity and their memory. And so we were very, very careful about this and back and forth. And at the end of the day, what we wanted to do was have a new position in the community that people could better recognize us. We could really get out there and more recognition, more of the services that we're providing to better link people to those services. We're seeing huge rises in STIs. We're seeing, again, rises in HIV infections across the map, younger generations, people under 20, multiple infections of people under 20. It's just devastating to see that again. And so we had to respond. We had to make sure that people could hear us and see us and know that this work is being done and that they have a partner in the community.
Well, and before we reveal that new mission statement for face-to-face, we're going to take a quick music break. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Whoa. And that was Coldplay with a song from their newest album called We Pray. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia, and we are commemorating World AIDS Day coming up on December 1st with local leaders from Face to Face here in Sonoma County, Sarah Brewer, Lori Violette, and Gary Saperstein. And just before our music break, they were going to announce the new mission statement for Face to Face, just released this month. Drumroll, please.
Our new mission is Face-to-Face connects our Sonoma County community to the practical care and support that honors dignity for all.
Love it. Love
it. We're guided by our values of leading with love, no judgment ever, find a way, and foster community connection.
And I understand there's a new logo that's going to go along with this new mission?
Yes, yeah. We're really excited about it, and I feel like it really captures sort of like, the ground, grassroots, sort of eclectic nature of ourselves and just how we show up in the world a little bit, united, but a little, just true to ourselves, true to our core.
Well, for those of you who haven't seen the new logo, we'll make sure and have it available on our website at outbeatnews.com. You can click on show notes at the top of the page, and we'll have that available to you since we can't show it to you on the radio. I think one of the exciting things that I know that Lori and I talked about earlier this fall was that your work is no longer restricted to Sonoma County. I mean, I think you've always been very generous about helping anybody in need to the best that you can, but I know I very much appreciate the fact that Face-to-Face is in partnership with Napa Valley College and the Pride Center and providing resources there. You have a presence at SRJC, but talk about the reach now that may be a little bit different than what's happened before.
Yeah. I mean, I think our reach, you know, is our community. And however we want to describe who our community is, whether their zip code is, you know, this zip code or that zip code, our community is the people who come in contact with us mm-hmm. and the people that need our services. And so, we are expanding our services to reach younger folks, as well as folks that may speak a different language than English, and just not sticking to the areas that Sonoma County traditionally only reached, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And talk a little bit more about the education pieces. I know that sex education in schools has never been terrific, right? Are you working with local high schools, or how is that happening? If we have a young generation of people that's experiencing greater new infections, a higher infection rate, what does that look like for Face-to-Face's involvement?
Yeah, we really hope to be part of that conversation to get into traditional high schools and middle schools. We've never had a problem getting into the non-traditional high schools and middle schools. It's the traditional ones that we want to have a bigger presence at. So we, like just this year, this summer, we had staff going to some schools that were monolingual Spanish and providing education around STIs, overdose prevention, substance use disorders, and talking with folks in the language that they spoke around the services and trying to demystify some of the stigma that's associated with it culturally. And we hope to expand that. We know that, you know, the school districts now have like a fentanyl education program, and we're really hoping to be part of that program and to be part of that education and, you know, to get more vending machines out and about into to public areas where people have access to naloxone, which is the overdose reversal medication. For folks that are overdosing off of opioids.
Yeah, that's super important. I was very excited to see that being made available. You provided some for our Pride Center at the college, but we also have it available in our health center and in student housing. All the RAs are being equipped with it. I think it's just critical because you just never know who is going to need it, and you don't really have time at that moment to sort of wonder how to get it if you need to try to save somebody's life.
Most recently, we installed a naloxone vending machine at the Santa Rosa Junior College dorms.
Yeah.
And so now there's another access point for naloxone that's free of charge. So really happy about that as well.
No, that's fantastic. And I think both colleges, Santa Rosa and Napa, are learning what supporting student housing means, because it really is still a very new thing for both of those institutions. And there's a variety of new things that go along with that, that's for sure. Let's talk a little bit about how testing has shifted. I remember taking my best friend back in 2004 to the old Berkeley Clinic, you know, for a blood draw, and then having to wait 2 weeks and then coming back for the results. And I'll never forget the day that he got those results. I mean, there was no support. There was no linkage to care because he tested positive. And he didn't know anything about HIV, and I knew even less about HIV at the time. And so we were left with nothing. It was a horrible experience. And I think I've shared with all three of you that that's really what inspired me to go through the HIV test counselor training and then do that work, because the care piece is missing. But even then, before COVID, you had to come in and get a test. And during COVID, you shifted and got those tests where people could actually get them at home. Talk a little bit about how that works and how that's operating today.
Sure. Yeah, so we still offer testing at our 873 Second Street location and at all of our mobile van locations, which you can find that information on our website. And we do rapid testing. We no longer are providing the in-home test because now we just give a QR code or a link to takemehome.org, and people can order their test to be delivered directly to them, as well as other STI screening tests. So gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis, you can have mailed to you as well. And so that's been a huge benefit for the community. And when somebody comes in and asks for an in-home test, we can just test them right here with us if they want to, of course. We also can provide them the information to the Take Me Home if that's what they would like.
That is incredible. And so yes. What does a test like that cost if you were to get it from Take Me Home?
They're free, absolutely $0 to us or to the person that is ordering the test. You can buy them over the counter about $45-$55 at like Walgreens or, you know, a pharmacy kind of store. So you can purchase them over the counter as well.
But boy, to be able to go online and order them in the privacy of your own home and have it show up for free, that's incredible.
Yes. And I just want to talk about, you know, first I want to just say I am always inspired by you sharing about your experience with your friend getting tested and your friend testing positive. And like with the way that testing happens with us is we hold that person's hand until they say, you know, I don't need you to hold my hand anymore. And meaning like we'll walk them through that process. We'll link them, we'll be support for them. And we'll make sure that their knowledge, that they know that they're the drivers of their life and that they get to make these decisions, that this is not a decision that is made strictly by their healthcare provider, that they have a part in it and they have the right to understand ended. And so I think it's very empowers people to be able to know that and to have that support, you know, because people never forget how you make them feel. So if you have a horrible experience with somebody, they're not going to forget that.
Oh, yeah.
Just like when you have, if you have a really good experience and they walk you through this difficult time, they're going to remember that passion and that compassion that you had for them.
Sure. No, I can attest to that for sure. It makes all the difference in the world. Gary, let me ask you, you're the development director and had a big hand in raising the funds for the mobile van. You all mentioned that a bit ago. Talk about how that mobile van is used. Gloria mentioned that it's out providing support for those who need harm reduction equipment. But tell us more about where that van goes.
Yeah, well, it's all over the county now. All over the county now. And then people can go onto our website or even to our Facebook page, and we have sort of a map of, you know, days of the week and where the van goes to. And it is expanding all the time. We're going to more places wherever we are needed, wherever it is necessary. The van will be there, and it's just been an amazing addition that really grew out of COVID for us. You know, where we saw there really was a need. Lori was the first one when we had to shut down to say we can't stop this program. And we have to go out there on the road. Lori went out there on the road. And that was when the light bulb went off that we needed a van. And so that's how that all began. But really, it's about reaching those most, you know, underserved in our community,
mm-hmm.
Who can't make it in to our office. Or, you know, the van goes out to and around homeless encampments, trying to really help people who are out there on the streets every single day. And, you know, the person, Nick, who's running that van is amazing. His passion for the work that he does. People know him now. People trust him, which is one of the most important things, is the trust that is gained. So they're willing to come to the van, get what they need, get tested or get their supplies. And it's just been working beautifully.
That's great.
Really working beautifully.
That's great. Sarah, let me ask you about the Prep Navigator program or project that was thought about some years ago. I remember that there was lots of conversation about PrEP and coming up with a PrEP Navigator, and then some changes in legislation happened, and, you know, PrEP seemed to be much more accessible even just through a pharmacist. Talk about where face-to-face is now in terms of providing support and access to PrEP.
Yeah, excuse me. Well, we continue to, PrEP is a huge part of the wraparound portion of our services. So anybody that comes in for anything, you know, they're offered HIV testing, they're offered information about that. We did have a telehealth program, which now we're not a part of, but we do have, we can link people to a telehealth program where they can access it online, and it can all be done that way. And then we continue to link people to clinics and to healthcare providers who can prescribe the medication. There's now an injection that's available so that a person, rather than having to take a day, can get an injection, I think it's every other month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every other month. And so for people who, you know, as a woman, I related to a birth control pill that, you know, I mean, it's tricky to take medication daily for some folks. And so from an adherence standpoint, you know, a shot may be the better way to get that treatment. So we just, you know, we're here, we're linking people and continuing to work collectively as a county to see how we can increase access to PrEP. I think that there are plenty of people, let's say maybe already connected to care, that have access to PrEP, but there are lots of people in our community who don't know about it and don't have access to it, and because of stigma reasons, maybe don't want to access it. And again, where I think a vaccination, you know, or an injection is a great approach for somebody if they don't want the pills lying around, for example, you know. So right now we're really, really focusing on collaborating with our community partners and scaling up access to prevention, you know, working with the county health department. Every time that, you know, they ask now, were you offered PrEP? Did you know about PrEP? We hear a lot of feedback that people think it's unaffordable, that the reason they didn't get on PrEP is because they thought it was unaffordable. We can help people. Part of navigation is figuring out how to get it covered and how to get it free of charge. So there's all kinds of programs that are available, and we can help navigate people through those.
That's great.
Anybody who's might be interested in PrEP and thinks, oh, it's not for me, I can't afford it, I don't know, reach out to us. And there's plenty of other resources, but yeah, we will do our best, and we'll continue to do our best to get more people linked to PrEP.
Well, aside from just the goal of keeping people healthy, right, it's certainly, for insurance companies, much less expensive to pay for a PrEP prescription than an HIV treatment program. So it only makes sense for insurance companies and medical providers to be behind that 100%.
And PrEP is something that it's not, it's different for everybody. I think it depends on your lifestyle, depends on, you know, what your plans are, but PrEP isn't necessarily something that a person needs to take every day for the rest of their life. Right. You know, they can kind of come on and come off. So that's also something else to consider for people if they wanted to do, you know, they're interested, but they think, oh, I don't want to be on this for the rest of my life.
Sure.
You don't have to be. You
know, yeah. Something good to look into. So based on what you've seen in terms of the latest statistics and those most at risk, who are the at-risk populations that we need to be concerned about out there for new HIV infections? Lori?
I'm tempted to say everybody because the sense I get is that it's we're seeing spikes across all demographics, but I think that the biggest spike, and Lori, jump in, you know, but I think that the largest spikes that we're seeing are among Latina community members, and particularly women, heterosexual Latina women. We're seeing increase in diagnoses in younger folks, and so like I shared earlier, people under 20, we're seeing more of those. And then we're also seeing, I mean, I'm telling you, we're seeing infections in all demographics, even people in their 60s and 70s. So I think the other thing to consider is that there's also a rise in STIs, and a person with a sexually transmitted infection is more at risk for contracting HIV. And so, you know, there's other considerations to, you know, multiple factors. The other thing also that's happening is that it's trending more heterosexual. And I think we think it's largely a lot of it is being driven by drug use, injection drug use, but I would just say drug use.
Mm-hmm.
HIV can be spread not just by injection, but of course, like engaging in sexual practices that are more risky when you're under the influence.
So. Right. I think it's really interesting that you said that you've seen an uptick in infections in people in their 60s and 70s. Is that, do you think, maybe a resurgence in interest in sex after COVID and being locked down for a couple of years? What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everyone's looking to have a good time at some point. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to me. I get the 13 to 24-year-old range just because, you know, HIV and information about it hasn't really been in their face, so to speak. And schools, you know, have never been great about doing that education. But my generation should know better, and they should be more informed. And it just, that's super interesting to me.
Yeah.
What's the STI epidemic looking like in Sonoma County? I know that syphilis was an issue for a long time, but what are you seeing today as the sort of prevalent problem?
Well, syphilis is still on the uptick. Syphilis is still around. You know, chlamydia is the highest of STIs, right? But syphilis is right there. And so we're also testing for syphilis here at Face to Face, if I didn't say that before. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot more congenital syphilis. And so what's really alarming is that there's multiple babies that have been born from mothers who had syphilis that either didn't know or hadn't been linked to care during their pregnancy, and often they're unhoused. So a lot of our outreach is, you know, it's when we say that we're doing outreach, it's also even just connecting people, maybe if they're not ready for a test, if they do get tested, but it's connecting people to care. And I think that that's one of the things that's most devastating about the rise in the syphilis epidemic is that it's preventable, it's treatable, it was under control, and now it's not. And we have now children that are being born that are going to have to suffer with this disease for the rest of their life because it's not treatable. So it's like, yeah, it's just devastating. It is devastating. And all of that, you know, if a mother is linked to care, regardless of whether she's insured or not, in California, a mother has extraordinary prenatal care under Medi-Cal. So, you know, all of that. And they would, of course, get HIV testing as well.
Great. Well, Gary, let's come back to you. You're the money guy. I have heard and read about changes in funding, federal funding, and even some nonprofit support from corporations that are putting HIV services at risk. What are you seeing in terms of shifts of support and funding?
Well, you know, definitely there is a lot going on right now. You know, we just, Horizons Foundation has changes coming up, you know, in part of their funding where they're stopping their giving day of giving. Last year was their last year doing their day of giving. We just read, you know, just a couple of months ago, the AIDS ride. This June will be the last year of the AIDS ride. So things definitely are shifting. And of course, what's happening is funding is getting less and less, you know, here and there. We're fortunate here at Face to Face, but everything that we get doesn't cover everything that we do. You know, aside from the programs, there's also for every organization, every nonprofit, we have to keep the lights on.
Right.
You know, we have to open up our doors. All that costs money. You know, so there's always funding. There's always need for money just for us to be able to do that, which helps funds all the programs. It allows us to do the programs. If we weren't able to open up our doors and keep the lights on, we wouldn't be able to do the programs that we do.
Right.
So it's a constant, you know, battle, always looking for and needing support and donors where, you know, from people, especially people in our community.
So what, give me just a ballpark percentage of your budget depends on local donations.
Oh, well, we always need more. Right now, it's about that 27%, right? 27% is from, you know, local like donors, and you know, our goal really we want to bring that number up, and that's even part of, you know, this rebranding, and looking at what we're, you know, looking at our organization and keeping and evolving is for us to hopefully bring in new donors, new supporters, let our community know about the work that we're doing here, because we are known or have been known as just an HIV AIDS organization. We've expanded and evolved from that, and the community needs to know about the work that we're doing. And hopefully the more that we get that word out there, the more that people can want to support and be a part of the work that we're doing here.
Well, that percentage is only destined to increase. That reliance is only destined to increase if federal funding and corporate funding begins to disappear. So what I heard you say is almost a third of the funding that goes to provide the services that Face to Face does is reliant on the local community here. And with the end of the year coming, it's a perfect time to donate to an organization, especially one that provides such crucial services as Face to Face does. Talk about some ways that our listeners can make a decision now to donate and get that end of the year tax write-off.
Yes, everything's tax deductible, which is a great thing. But I mean, the number one way, of course, is anybody can go on our website any day of the week and donate right there at www.f2, as the number, f.org. We have wonderful, what we call monthly financial friends, who just, you know, every month, you know, have a check, you know, that's taken out of their bank account and, you know, just comes to us. It's a very painless and easy way, even if it's $10, $20, $50, $100, or whatever that amount is that's comfortable for a person. You know, it's a great way to just very easily continue to give every single month. And then, of course, there's, you know, legacy gifts. You know, think about our organization and the work that we do, and how that, you know, your legacy can live on in supporting the work that we do here at Face to Face every day. And then also there's, what we call stock. You know, a lot of people at the end of the year, it's a great time when you have to sell some stock or do stuff like, you know, do things like that. And it's another great way to give. And it's a fun way to give. For us, you know, we actually then have to, you know, you sell the stock on one day, how much is it going to be worth the next day? But whatever that is, it's really another great way to give at the end of the year.
And a great way to shelter some tax liability as well.
Right, exactly. We have a ton of nonprofits here in Sonoma County, an inordinate amount of, you know, nonprofits. And we hope to be and want to be one of those organizations that people know about and care about, because the work is so vital to the community that we hope that you'll will be one of yours that you want to support.
Well, you certainly have a long legacy of service, and I think that's one of the things that's really important to donors. You want to put your money in a reliable organization, one that has a proven history and a proven track record, and I can't think of too many others that I would feel good about other than face-to-face. So, Gary, I'm assuming you're the best contact for someone who wants to pass on some stock or part of their IRA or talk about how to leave something in their will. We'll put your contact information on our website so that folks can go and make that happen. Congratulations on the new mission, the new beautiful logo, and all the good work that you continue to do. And as I said earlier, I so appreciate all that you do, especially for our students in the community college system that I work with. Having access to information, testing, condoms, and everything that you provide is vital to their good health, and it's just amazing. So Gary, Lori, and Sarah, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving us a platform.
Yes. And don't forget, World AIDS Day is coming up on December 1st. If you'd like to make a contribution to support care for people living with HIV, treatment, prevention, and all the great work that Face2Face does, visit their website at F2F, that's F the number 2F.org. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Radio's Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. The Jazz Hot is next.